Now we're going to change to move on to agenda paper three. This is a little bit different to what we normally do. This is a paper where we don't have a sort of staff recommendation, draft agenda decision. It's rather a sort of educational piece, teeing up the issue of supply chain financing and reverse factoring that we received a submission on from Moody's. That's publicly acknowledged who submitted it. The idea is that we'll have a discussion and get some sort of thoughts from the committee, and that subsequently there'll be another paper produced for us to discuss on this topic. And am I handing over to Craig to present this paper? There you are.
Yes.
Okay, thanks, Craig.
Thank you, Sue. Yes, so the committee has received a submission about supply chain financing. The submission asks about how an entity classifies and discloses information about such arrangements. So as Sue's just mentioned, this agenda paper provides background information about the arrangements in the submission, and there's no decision-making at this meeting. And so in paragraphs 8 to 26 of the paper, we provide information about the different types of supply chain arrangements and the prevalence of each. As a result of this information, following discussion with the submitter, the remainder of the paper focuses on reverse factoring agreements specifically. So paragraphs 27 to 40 describe the key terms of reverse factoring arrangements, and paragraphs 41 to 51 provide information about how entities account for those arrangements in practice. So I'll hand over to the committee members to discuss any questions or comments on the contents of the paper.
Okay, who'd like to talk about supply chain financing? Carsten?
Yes, thank you, Sue. First of all, I think this is the paper is a very good summary of of the arrangements that are out there, and consistent with what I've been seeing in practice. I think there's a fair amount of judgment around the appropriate accounting for such arrangements. And as a result, I think that, it's fair to say that there's quite a bit of diversity in practice, which, I think is a natural consequence of the judgment involved in relation to the accounting treatment for these arrangements. So I feel that, probably there's not too much the committee can do around presentation, given the diversity in these arrangements and the judgment involved. But I do think the committee could be helpful to constituents in terms of highlighting relevant applicable disclosure requirements in particular. And I feel that especially some of the disclosure and also presentation requirements in IS1 are quite relevant in this regard. Both around presentation and disclosure, and perhaps also some of the disclosure requirements in IS7 for non-cash transactions. So I think I guess my comment would be that I think it would be for the further discussion it would be quite helpful to do some more analysis around applicable disclosure requirements, especially not just in IFRS 7 but also in IS1 and IS7. But overall, I think it's a very good summary.
Thank you, Carsten. Bertrand.
Thank you, Sue. Like Carsten, I think the paper was very clear and very understandable. I don't have a personal practice on such arrangements, so I found the paper very complete in describing the various types of supply chain financing arrangements we could find. My understanding of the paper is that the staff seems to propose to restrict the analysis to reverse factoring, which as a first step, which I would think a good suggestion, and I would be happy to follow that and to follow the staff's suggestion on that. And maybe because I hear quite some comments from the French constituents I'm talking with, and probably considering a couple of questions to deal with in addition to what is mentioned in the paper. First thing would be to deal with the accounting in the P&L, which is not specifically mentioned in the paper, but I think maybe I've understood that, maybe not directly, but indirectly, it could have consequences for the entities that use such types of arrangements. So maybe considering the classification in the P&L would be something valuable in the future analysis made by the staff, and then. Considering to answer the question whether or not to consider an amendment to IS7, because I quite like the gross-up presentation that is described in paragraph 50b of the agenda paper, but at the same time I understand that it's quite challenging to do that. Because it seems to contradict the current principles contained in IS7, and notably in paragraph 43, as mentioned in paragraph 50A of the agenda paper. But maybe at least considering the question as to whether or not there is an opportunity there to amend it, because I quite like the gross presentation personally. And then, of course, considering whether or not, as a last question, whether or not, I think it's clearly hinted, reading the paper to amend eventually some or to precise the disclosure requirements relating to such arrangements.
Thanks, Bertrand. Bob, and then Brian.
Thanks, Sue. Also, I would like to compliment the staff on the paper. I thought it was very well done. The focus in the paper was on reverse factoring, and the most immediate accounting issue when you get into reverse factoring is the issue of, you know, when the supplier transfers to the bank, is that really a transfer? Is that an extinguishment of the original payable and recognition of, you have to recognize a new one? And we've been dealing with this, or we've seen these transactions over 15 years ago. And we need to deal with this one, but my point is they're starting to evolve, and they're not all having to involve the transfer. Some do. We're seeing electronic transfers, electronic time drafts, but we're also seeing purchase cards and other transactions. And I think there's another underlying issue that we may have to eventually get into, otherwise we're just going to keep chasing this, and that is the delineation between trade payables and debt. And there I struggle. I don't know, is the delineation supposed to be meant on, you know, who is the creditor at the start? Is it priority in bankruptcy? Is it time? And many people seem to be troubled by time, because we're seeing these extending out up to, you know, 360 days. And does that really seem like a trade payable? That seems to bother a number of people. I think it would be helpful if we could understand what users are looking for, how they delineate between trade payables and debt. I think that may be helpful in thinking about this. The last point I wanted to raise is just so everybody is aware, not that we need to consider this, but this is also an issue at the FASB's Emerging Issues Task Force, the EITF. Now, they're not dealing with the whole thing. They're just dealing with cash flows and the disclosure aspect of it, not the balance sheet aspect of this. But I thought we should be aware of that.
Thanks, Bob. Brian, and then Jens.
Thanks, Sue. So like others, I really liked the staff paper. I thought it was very good and clear. And I thought it built on what was actually a very good and interesting submission as well. When I look at the submission, it's quite focused, at least initially, on disclosure. And I do wonder if disclosure is going to be a particularly important aspect of this question, similar to what Carsten was saying. There are quite a lot of existing disclosures that could turn out to be relevant, including those in IS1 and IS8 about disclosing an accounting policy, disclosing the significant judgments, identifying items that could perhaps be separately identified either on the current statements or in the notes. One of the benefits of perhaps leading on disclosure is that I fear that a more detailed consideration of some of the accounting will be challenging because of the current diversity of the arrangements and the possibility of both sides that they are kind of evolving as we speak. Finally, I was interested in Bob's point that distinguishing between trade payables and debt is particularly difficult. I think it is particularly difficult. I also wonder if an interesting or helpful practice would be to actually, at least in the notes, have a separate line item for balances covered by this kind of arrangement. I think I just want to accommodate that. But overall, good paper, and it would be really good to push on disclosure.
Thanks, Brian. Jens and then Guy.
I fully like the paper that has been drafted. And I'd like to echo what Bob already pointed out, that there's difficult to point a line or draw a line between trade payables and debt. When I read the submission that has been raised, my question would be whether the submission really asks for disclosure or asks for a presentation issue. And because I do think that presentation would be much more helpful in order to address the concerns in the submission. And then looking to the standard, when looking to paragraph 55 of IS1, I do think that we can fit in these supply chain finance arrangements into paragraph 55 and a separate line item within the balance sheet. And this then would cause different disclosures for the balance sheet as well as for the cash flow statement. So I would like to concentrate on presentation within the balance sheet rather than disclosures only.
Okay, thank you. Guy and then Goro.
Thanks, Sue. You know what, I too will echo the compliments on the paper. It's a very good and succinct landscape of reverse factoring in particular. You know, if I think forward to how, as a committee, we might approach this issue, you know, one obvious tact is, you know, an educational type agenda decision that reminds readers of the various aspects of IS1, IS7, IFRS 7, et cetera, that are relevant to presentation and disclosure around this issue. Having said that, though, similar to the last comment, you know, if there was a way of doing something a little more impactful here to create commonality in presentation, that in my mind would bring a lot more transparency to these arrangements and be much more useful, I think, at the end of the day. I acknowledge, though, the issue of the diversity in the specifics of these arrangements, and that, of course, bears on the accounting analysis around how to present these things. But if there is a way that, you know, we could achieve something that would bring more transparency from a presentation standpoint to this, I think that would be helpful. Having said that, you know, one of the big challenges here is, you know, a balance sheet focus versus a cash flow focus, and some of the difficulties in achieving a presentation that is most useful in both a financial position context and a cash flow context. And we need to sort of navigate both ends of this question. Achieving a balance sheet approach that more commonly will treat this as financing, if the consequence of that is none of the outflows end up in operating outflows in the cash flow, that's in my mind not the greatest of outcomes either. Thinking about both and trying to achieve a presentation outcome that is going to provide the most useful information to users would be the ideal objective here, rather than just a sort of an educational reminders on existing aspects of IFRS that might apply. I'm not convinced that that'll bring a lot more transparency to these arrangements.
Okay, thank you. Goro and then Bonnie. Can't hear you, Goro.
Well, thank you. I also think that this paper is very well written and very informative and for the educational purpose. And I also share the concern of the submission raised by Moody's. And Moody's point out the three problems of the supply chain financing caused by the lack of the adequate disclosures, namely difficulty in apple-to-apple comparison between the company using supply chain financing arrangement and those that do not. And also, nature of debt-like liabilities obscured by this kind of arrangement. And third, default risk could be obfuscated by the lack of adequate disclosures. And I have a question to Craig, that have you already analyzed or evaluated whether all these problems pointed out in the submission are well-grounded or not? And also, how serious they are if they are buried? And like many others, I have, I think that this could be solved by presentation rather than disclosure. But the financial statement the users may include presentation as a disclosures. So that the other question is, is it possible for us to achieve the level of the disclosure that submission suggests just with the agenda decision or some amendments to the IFRS 7 needed through the standard setting activities? I was not very sure that the submissions itself, it says it is narrow enough to the committee can address the issue. So I basically got the two questions to Craig. That's it.
So do you want me to comment before Bonnie speaks, or do you know if you have a preference?
Why don't we let Bonnie speak and then you can maybe respond.
Okay, I'll answer, Carlo.
Okay. Bonnie.
Thank you. Yeah, can you hear me okay?
We can.
Okay, great. So I think I agree with the others that the paper was very well written, and I think from my perspective does cover the types of items that I have seen in practice over a longer period of time. I think fundamentally for me it's a question of what is the nature of the transaction. Is it, and Bob briefly mentioned this, is it, at least from the one entity side, is it still a trade payable, or is it some sort of financing? And from my perspective, that's the first question to ask, because once you resolve that question and understand what is the nature of the thing, and does it change based on the transaction itself, then you have a path on, if it's still a trade payable, then perhaps that takes you down one path in terms of presentation and disclosure. If it's not a trade payable, then I think that takes you down a different path from a financing perspective, and existing guidance does give the things that we need to think about from a presentation and disclosure. I do agree with Bob that there are a variety of ways these transactions can be structured. And so there are, I think, you know, maybe speaking in a bit more detail, if you have a transaction between an entity and a supplier and there's no third party involved, I think that leads you down one path. Presumably there's still a trade payable aspect, and that's the nature of the transaction. If you have a third party involved, a financial institution of some kind, then to me that opens up a few more questions that you need to ask. If it's something that's purely between the financial institution and the supplier, with no impact on the entity itself, even if they have a direct interaction, then I think that is one set of facts. If you have changes in the nature of the item that is involving the financial institution, then to me that starts to look a little bit more like some sort of financing. If there's an extension of terms, if there's some sort of risk that's being maintained, or et cetera, et cetera. And so I believe that's the fundamental question that we need to answer first, before we go down the path on the presentation and disclosure, both on the balance sheet, the P&L, and the cash flow. Because to me, depending on what it is, drives you down that path. Now, that being said, I do think there is a valid question on if there are these types of arrangements, is there an incremental disclosure that's not currently covered by existing guidance? Because I think there are things that you can refer to in the framework in IS 1 and IS 7. I think it's very broad. And I think, as the staff found, there are differences in how people have interpreted that, notwithstanding materiality. So I think there's a fundamental question that drives how we proceed. I think that, and it's easy for me to say because unfortunately, or fortunately, as you may look at it, my term is ending, so I won't be a part of how this may actually end up. But I do think that it would involve some change to the standards in order to provide either additional guidance, whether that's an IFRIC or if the standards themselves have to be changed.
Bonnie, Ton.
Thank you very much. First of all, I would like to thank the staff for drafting the paper. It provides a magnificent overview of these type of arrangements, and it's already echoed by others. We discussed this issue in C1, IOSCO, and we have more or less the same concerns as expressed by Bonnie and Goro. We do believe that standard setting here is needed. So some of the members are suggesting whether it would be possible to take it into account in the primary financial statements project, or I should say the general presentation and disclosure project. The key issue is is it the trade payable? Is it the financing? That should be decided and. We think that standard setting is more appropriate to come to more transparent accounting. Thank you.
Thanks, Ton. I was going to say a couple of things. Craig, do you want to speak first, or do you want me to say a couple of things first?
You can go first, I don't mind.
So I also found this paper very interesting. I think it's a very topical and very interesting area, so I hope it's something where the committee might be able to provide some really useful input to the market. But I think, you know, it's good to start with this educational material and this educational analysis and then work forward. I wondered whether for me, for the sort of next phase of the analysis, because I'm a very sort of structured person in terms of how I like to analyse things, for me I think it's quite useful to look first at sort of not look at words like novation and things like that, because I think they can mean different things to different people and they might have different consequences in different jurisdictions as well. But in the first instance, to ask a sort of fundamental question, which is, does it cause a sort of derecognition slash extinguishment from a IFRS 9 perspective or not? And how do you think about whether it does or it doesn't? If it does cause a derecognition, then there's one set of analysis. If it doesn't cause a derecognition, there's another set of analysis. But then sort of looking at the two paths, if there is derecognition, what does that then mean for presentation? What does that mean for disclosure? What does it mean for the cash flow statement? If it's not a derecognition, but you sort of changed your counterparty, what does that then mean in terms of presentation, cash flow statement, disclosure, and sort of analyze where we get with our current literature and sort of assess how useful that is from an agenda decision educational perspective, and then see whether we think there's gaps in the information that gets provided based on our understanding of the user needs, which I know you've already been working on, to see whether there would be a suggestion that some further standard setting might be appropriate to improve the set of information that's available, but to sort of analyze it in those pieces in quite a structured way, for me, I think might be quite useful. So I'm not sure how that sort of lines up, Craig, with what you've been thinking based on what you've seen to date and what the committee have said.
Yeah, thanks. I think it is quite similar to what we're planning. So as you just mentioned, we have been speaking to some users, both individually and kind of groups of users, to get an idea of what it is that users really want to know from the financial statements for these particular types of arrangements. And that's not something that we summarized in this paper, because we've got some ongoing calls still to do. But for the paper in June, what we did plan to do was to start with basically what do we think current IFRS requirements require you to do, then have a bit of a summary in terms of what users say they want, and then consider do we think that there's sufficient requirements in IFRS, or do we think there needs to be some kind of standard setting type things to go on there? And so that was kind of the structure we were planning to go through in June. But I think in terms of Gorla's specific question, in terms of what users have said so far, I think many of them have echoed what is in Moody's letter as being particular areas of concern, particularly around the ability to compare different companies and just they really want to know which company are doing this to allow them their comparison to be made easier.
Thanks, Craig. And I think there's a few follow-on comments in response to what I've said and what you have said. So, Bob?
Thanks, Sue. I agree with the way you structured it and the way you analyzed it, and that's how I look at it. But there is, and what's been evolving is you're in that structure and looking at that, you're starting with the premise that this is a trade payable. And what we're seeing, I think, is challenges to, is that starting thing, which you then analyze under IFRS 9, is it a transfer, is it not a transfer, is that starting thing a trade payable? And that was the point I was trying to get before with this delineation between trade payable and debt.
Sorry, Bob, I'm not sure if it was only cutting out for me, but I didn't catch much of what you said then.
Oh, okay. Try again. I agree with the structure that you laid out, that you start and you look at whether it's a transfer under IFRS 9 and then the follow-on parts. The point I was trying to raise before, though, is the way we're seeing this evolve is your way you start and the way I usually start, that assumes that these are trade payables. And what we're seeing evolving is challenges to whether that starting point really is a trade payable that you're then looking at whether it's a transfer or an extinguishment.
Okay. All right. Okay. We can have a look at that. Okay. Fair point. Carsten.
Yeah, I just want to make two quick comments. First one is I think in many of these arrangements, there will not be a clear dividing line between trade payables and financing, because there will be an element of both. I also feel quite strongly that I think regardless of, we can discuss whether standard setting is needed or not, but I think regardless of the answer to that, I think the committee should do something around, highlighting existing disclosure requirements that are already out there. I think, if those are consistently applied, a lot of transparency can be created, which is what a lot of users and also regulators are looking for. So I think we should, you know, regardless of whether or not we recommend standard setting, I think we should highlight some of those existing disclosure requirements.
Yeah, I agree with you. So that's why I think in the first instance, we should see what could we do based on what's existing? So how does that look? And then do we think there's more as well in either or? Yeah. But yeah, I agree with you. Bertrand, you want to come back in?
Yes, thank you, Sue. Just a small comment on saying that if the conclusion of the staff after the staff's analysis were to propose the interpretations committee to issue some sort of tentative agenda decision, I would suggest eventually considering an extended comment period for such a tentative agenda decision. Due to the current circumstances, I think most preparers will be struggling with their half-year closing in most jurisdictions and probably won't have much time to consider a 60-day comment period if the staff were to propose and the committee were to decide to towards a tentative agenda decision. So maybe something that could also be considered by the staff during their thought process.
Yeah, that's a good reminder. I think we'll need to keep that in mind in the next few months for everything that we look at in terms of what's urgent, what's less urgent, what's the most appropriate stance, but it's a good reminder. Bonnie?
Yes, thank you, Sue. I think similar to Bob's point, I think the nature of what it is a critical item that I think both from a preparer perspective, but also then a user perspective, because if it's a trade payable, then I think a company views it in one way. If it's not a trade payable, then they view it in a very different way. And I think the interaction with how some companies report non-GAAP or alternative performance measures may also be relevant in thinking through how things are structured and what people believe the nature of it is. If there is some sort of debt measure, net debt or free cash flow or something that people report that depending on the nature of AP or financing impacts that, then companies are going to naturally have a view on what they think it is. And so that's why I think it's very important to consider the point that Bob raised in terms of what is it? And then I think you apply the IFRS to what it is and then see if there's something that's missing or needs to be added.
Yeah, and I think that will be important in the analysis because I think one of the challenges we've got is there isn't that much guidance in our literature that I at least can think of off the top of my head that sort of helps you know how to even think about whether it's a, you know, we use, I think, trade payable in a few places, but it's not really defined. So I think that's one of the challenges. So maybe some pointers on what to think about might be something useful to look at. Goro, you wanted to come back in?
Yes, thank you, Sue. And I completely agree with Bonnie at the point that the nature of the transaction is very important. And also that they want to share that the information that guy from the CF Institute recently contributed the article to the Corporate Reporting Users Forum newsletter, or CRAF newsletter, that they're pointing out that this supply chain finds one of the factors for the bankruptcy of the Carillion and also Abengoa in Spain, so that this lack of transparency or lack of adequate disclosure on the supply chain management by the preparers is a really serious issue for the financial statement users. So I think that this is a very important topic. Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. Guy.
I just wanted to echo the starting point comment of the analysis and the presumption that, you know, the starting point is trade, then I need to go through a derecognition, re-recognition type assessment. You know, I think the challenge with that as a starting point is it often becomes difficult to point to specific things that would require derecognition of the origination of the credit on the balance sheet. The terms, the supply, the arrangements between the customer and the supplier are often struck in advance of originating any invoices under the arrangement, but they're struck in contemplation of this broader arrangement existing. And so oftentimes you don't see any specific amendment to the contractual terms of the invoice between the customer and the supplier once that invoice is originated. And so then to, you know, start in a notion that, well, it originates as trade, and then I need to think about whether it gets derecognized and re-recognized as something else, it often results in it being difficult to insist upon a derecognition event and a re-recognition event. And so I like the notion that I think Bob was alluding to, in that, well, we need to think about, you know, what is being originated in the first place, and is what is being originated in the first place truly a trade payable, or is it financing from day one? I think that it should be an important sort of feature in terms of how we think about application of existing IFRSs to the arrangement, rather than starting with the presumption that I originate a trade payable and then I need to think about derecognition and re-recognition.
I think I was thinking about something even more basic than what either of you are talking about, though, because whether it started as a trade payable or just an obligation to pay somebody, our literature always requires you to think about whether you still have your original obligation or has it been replaced by a different obligation. Whether that's a trade payable or a loan or anything doesn't change the fact that you have to do that first step of the analysis, but maybe we should take it offline to look at the specifics, because I think you've both got something very specific in your mind, so it'd be interesting to understand that. Okay, so lots to think about. So some good pointers in terms of next steps, I think, Craig. I think that's all for now on this agenda paper. So with that, Petrina, am I handing over to you for the work in progress paper or to Javed?
It's to me.
Okay,